Welcome to Eat, Capture, Share, the podcast for food bloggers and food photographers who want to earn an income doing what they love. My name is Kimberly. I'm your host. Episode 132. Welcome back, everybody, to the Eat, Capture, Share podcast. My name is Kimberly Espinel. I'm a food photography teacher. I'm the author of the Amazon best-selling book, Creative Food Photography, and the forthcoming book, How to Make Your Food Famous. I'm also a creative business mentor for food photographers, food bloggers, and food content creators just like you. And before we dig into today's podcast episode, and I can warn you now, it's a really, really good one. I just wanted to say thank you so much for your warm response to my last episode, where I shared more about my new book, How to Make Your Food Famous. An especially massive big thank you to everybody who has pre-ordered as well. It makes such a difference. And I'm just so grateful. So thank you so, so much. Now, the topic, of course, of my new book is all about how to share your food content online with maximum impact. But interwoven into that for me, and that's something I explore throughout the book, is really the question of how you do that, how you show up online and try to get as many likes and follows, which I think are perfectly fine to want and desire. But how do you do that? How do you pursue those things while staying true to your art, true to who you really are as a creative, rather than merely pandering to the algorithms? And this question of balancing these two kind of opposing forces, I guess, led me to today's podcast guest, Adrian Purr. I would say he's probably one of my most favorite creative accounts to follow right now on Instagram, because for me, he really embodies those two principles, impact and authenticity. And it is both those things that we dig deeper into in this episode. Adrian is a hugely successful filmmaker. His clients include people like Lil Nas X, Megan Thee Stallion, Nike, Aloe Yoga, and many, many more. He's just incredibly successful, both in terms of his music video direction, his photography work. I mean, he's done it all. And yet what he's decided to do in these last 2 years, just over a year and a half actually now, is create highly personalized work and share that on Instagram. And we explore really how he landed on Instagram, why he decided to create work that is so personal, and how he's made his work both authentic and successful. So it's a really inspiring story. If you're curious to see who I'm inspired by, who I look up to, the type of work that I want to do more of, then definitely tune in today. And then also check out Adrian's social. We'll link to that in the show notes, and I'll mention it towards the end of the podcast as well. But without further ado, I'm just going to have you listen and tune in today. This is definitely one to grab a coffee or tea with, maybe a cookie or something, to sit down and enjoy. I love this conversation, and I hope you do too. Adrian, thank you so much for agreeing to come onto the Eat, Capture, Share podcast. I am very excited about our chat today. Of course, I follow you, fangirl over you, obsessed with your content, but there may be people tuning in who are like, Adrian who? So please do introduce yourself.
Well, first, thank you for having me. So yeah, my name is Adrian Purr. Online, I go by OMG Adrian, a handle that I'd made years ago, but now I gotta stick with it. And I'm a filmmaker. I just make films about everything and anything that interests me.
Now, it feels to me that just one day you showed up on Instagram and you kind of blew up, but I don't know if that is how it went, or if you've been on Instagram for a long time. I'd love to get a better understanding on how you found your way onto that platform.
Yeah, you know, to most people, which, I mean, there's still way more people who don't know about me or my work. I had been posting on social media for years. And I was, you know, as a creator, it's only, you know, new way to get your work seen. And I've had a camera in my hands since I was 17, you know, uploading to Flickr, Tumblr, and then Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and then TikTok. And it used to be about the things that, you know, just the things that I did and saw. And then I started, however this happened, which is also a blessing, like it started to become my professional career. So I use social media to post the things that I've worked on. And I'd been doing that since, like, I don't know, 2012. And it just so happens in 2023, I decided to make my own work and not just share the work that I worked on as a professional filmmaker. And people, for whatever reason, seem to like that more, which I never would have thought, because my whole approach to social media was like, let me show the public or these companies who I've worked with and how good it looks and, you know, that my clientele, and then maybe I'll get hired. And I thought that's what they wanted. And turns out I was, I don't want to say completely wrong. It's not completely wrong, but I just never thought the silly ideas and just my interests and how I direct it would be the thing to take me to this. Seemingly, it feels like such a short period of time of success.
I'm really intrigued to know what made you want to shift from sharing, you know, highly curated. I mean, your content now is also highly curated, but very stylized, I guess, and to something that is much more personal. Like, what propelled you to change your social media approach and the way that you share your films?
Well, there's a couple of reasons, actually. The first one being Instagram and TikTok and YouTube, like all these social platforms I used to look at as a place of inspiration. You know, like people would post amazing things, like not thinking about the outcome of views. Like they just posted what they wanted to post, and which I think created the best art, because they were making things for the sake of fulfilling whatever their creative vision was, not because of, you know, the outcome or, you know, the likes and the reach of their content. And it had been exhausting from like 2021 to 2022. I really saw not necessarily a downfall of creative content. There was a handful of people that I really enjoyed, but you know, at this point, a lot of my favorite content creators were burnt out. You know, I spent many years watching them. And they weren't making content anymore, which is fair. You know, like keeping up with social media and like posting on the internet's really hard. I just felt like everything, like post-pandemic social media, like during the pandemic, it was great, kept me entertained. And then all these trends, the boom of the trends happened. And I felt like everybody wanted to recreate what was already working. So that was the first reason. Second reason is October of 2022, I unfortunately had a traumatic life experience with a sudden loss of my father. And I just questioned everything that I was doing, you know, and like at this point, I would say, I don't want to say I've had a successful career, but I've been able to stay afloat just making, you know, videos and films for other brands, other artists, just clients in general. But I had been itching to make something that was, you know, my own voice. And thankfully I had friends and people really, really close to me tell me, you know, all of this content online that you see, and like sometimes I complain about it and be like, yeah, you have what it takes to make it. Why don't you just go and make it? And I would brush it off. I'm like, why would anybody want to see my work? Why would I'm not meant to be in front of the camera. Like people like me because of the clients that I work with. Like I was fortunate enough to have, you know, some star power in the things that I've directed. And that's what I thought people followed my work for. And I'm not exactly sure what moment clicked for me, but I'm kind of an obsessive person. And when I commit to something and I say I'm going to do it, I'm just going to 100% go for it. And at some point in October, the month that my father passed, I was like, you know what? I think it's time for me to just make things speaking from my heart, from my mind, my soul. Like it was just, it was a creative outlet. And around November, I decided to start filming and stacking content for myself so that when January 1st hits, I had something every single day to post.
Wow, that's insane. I don't think I quite followed you from there. I think I came a little bit later where it was more like, I think you do like a weekly film now. That's
yeah.
When you got into that rhythm, that's really when I found you. And you know, it's really interesting sort of listening to your story, and also so sorry about your dad. You know, parents are just like so special. So I my condolences. I'm sure it still hurts. Thank you for sharing. But what I think is really interesting, and I'm coming at this as a food photographer, because I'm really a food photographer, and most of the people tuning in are as well. And
I've seen your work. It's great.
Thank you so much. What I think is really interesting with your work, and why I think myself and some of the people who tune in have been kind of a little bit reluctant to fully embrace, you know, short form video, is that, you know, food photography especially is very stylized. It's very perfect. It's very beautiful, you know, and then when 2020 came and everything went kind of TikTok style, very raw and real and fast paced, it was like the total opposite end of what the aesthetic that we had cultivated on Instagram. And then when I look at your work, I feel it is kind of in this in between. Like, I wouldn't say that your content is slow, anything but it has a very kind of gentle pace and doesn't feel as frenetic as, you know, some of the other short form content pieces. And yet it works. And so as somebody who doesn't understand filmmaking, I'm very interested to understand how you approach pacing and how you approach storytelling so that it's still, you know, it's got a nice tempo to keep people's attention and to grab their attention. But at the same time, we're not kind of dancing and, you know, we have all these whatever crazy changes. And like, how do you think about that? How do you do that? How do you look at that? Does my question make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I could break that down. It's a formula and it's just a skill that, you know, you just build over time. But, you know, this all comes from, well, one, it's something that every filmmaker practices from the beginning. But, you know, 2020, the fast paced content started coming out and it just became exhausting. Short form fatigue, if it hadn't changed, you know, if it hadn't adapted to, you know, this, I don't want to say slower pace, but just like better pacing to where a lot of content is now, I think people would be over short form content. And it worked for a little bit. You know, it was different, but I mean, I truly believe that timeless, well thought out art will always triumph. And, you know, to just bring these actual filmmaking principles to the platform, I think, you know, it's a method that stands a test of time. And when people would talk to the camera, when they would set their iPhone up and they would edit it, they would take out the pauses. They would take out the thought in between words, in between sentences. That's not a conversation. You know, like even the way we're speaking now, people listen to podcasts because there is a conversational pacing to the manner which we talk. And it really just comes down to that. That's the formula. You want to talk to the camera the way you'd be talking or explaining something to a person that's sitting in front of you. Like a lot of people tend to think, let me just cram as much information or as much value or cut out as much dead time as possible. And sure, it works sometimes, but that's exhausting. It's like, there's something about hearing a person breathing in between their words that psychologically it also does something. When you take out all the breaths, you know, if you ever listen to maybe you'll notice it from here on out, some of the best filmmakers or the best storytellers, like they will leave the breathing in the voiceover when it's appropriate. And, you know, there's a lot of times where there's content that takes it out and it feels like you're out of breath. But there's also a reason, you know, there's also use cases for that if you want to create anxiety. But these are just basic filmmaking principles. You know, you don't watch a movie and they don't blaze through the script super fast. It just depends on the mood. If I'm trying to explain something that's fast paced or exciting, then I'll speak faster. But if I'm trying to capture an emotion, it's all about the timing. You want people to have enough time to process and think about what you said.
But I think it's so tempting with the way that Instagram is to rush through things. So, you know, that's why I was saying, in a way, in theory, your content shouldn't work, but it does. And, you know, that's for me been really fascinating to find this kind of in between yeah. An in-between of stills.
Yeah. And I think I want to just interject here real quick. I think a lot of people, you know, because a lot of people don't have this, I guess, movie or filmmaking based background. A lot of people tend to think the way to capture attention is by not losing attention with the pauses and the thoughts in between. But you keep attention with a feeling. You don't keep attention with words. You don't keep attention with captions. People love sharing their, you know, Instagram or TikTok, or just social media hacks of how to keep people's attention. And what it comes down to, it really is a feeling. If people are in tune, or if you captivate them enough and they feel something, they're not going to swipe away from the video. It doesn't matter how long you hold them in between sentences. If you make them feel something, that feeling is going to last. And it's not about how many words you say within 90 seconds. It's never been about that. Like I said, movies aren't about that. And I think people just have to think about that. You know, it's based off of feeling. So if whatever you're saying or whatever you're showing, whether it's photography, whether it's, you know, a film about your dog, write your script or make sure your dialogue is captivating enough to make sure that it captures a feeling.
I love that. Now, I have one more question that I'd like to pull out from something that you said before we kind of move on to some of the questions that I sent to you. It sounds to me that a lot of the work that you did before 2023 was really you behind the camera, you as the filmmaker. And again, I'm thinking about some of the people tuning in here who are most comfortable behind the camera rather than in front of the camera. And I don't know if you have any tips or advice in terms of, and I don't know if you needed it, to get the confidence to step in front of the camera, to show your face, to speak to camera. Did you have to overcome something within you, or did it come to you very naturally? And if the former, any tips that you can share?
Oh, every day, all the time, when I step out there in public and I'm filming, you know, I think about these things, but at the end of the day, I shouldn't care. Like, nobody cares, you know, how I look or how stupid I feel as much as what's inside my head. I've put out videos of myself, like with my innermost thoughts of, you know, my bloopers, and just nobody actually cares as much as me, you know, and anybody who does make negative comments, they have a bigger issue than I do anyways. 100%. So I really just put it aside, but it gets easier, especially since I'm still more comfortable behind the camera than in front. But it's just by doing. And also, you know, when you look at social media, like, it's really only the most beautiful, the tallest, the most athletic looking, you know, that's what people tend to think it is. And like, to be honest, I thought about that. I'm like, damn, I'm not any of these things. Why would anybody want to watch me? But, you know, it's just, if you're an expert at what you know, whether it's food photography or filmmaking or how to color a video or how to best train your dog, if you come at it from an approach of just speaking about what you know, people will listen, and not having to explain to people that you're an expert.
Yeah.
What I don't enjoy is people wasting the first 15 seconds saying, this is why you should listen to me because I've done X, Y, Z and I'm an expert in this. I'm like, bro, shut up. Just tell me. Like, and that's what I love YouTube, but I chose short form platforms because on YouTube, it takes like a minute or two to get to the point of whatever they're making, like explaining the intro and who they are, and they're, I can't do it. I just can't. It's just by doing it over and over again. And I don't necessarily think I have the confidence. I just talk to the camera like it's not there.
But I do think there's something about just the practice of it. I just think, I'm guessing that maybe the first one was like inside, you're probably dying. I don't know, you know, especially the ones you do, because you do quite a lot in public as well. So I don't know what it felt like, but I wonder if just over time, because you definitely don't look nervous or anything like that in front of the camera. So I'm wondering if it's a lot to do with practice, and also maybe realizing that nobody is looking. Everybody's kind of busy with their own stuff, I'm guessing. I don't know if you ever had people come up to you and ask you what you're doing. I don't know.
Oh yeah. Sometimes people come up, but to be honest, to be just completely, completely honest, the humiliating thoughts the very first time I did this up until now, I still have.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes it easier is that I've just done it so many times that
exactly.
I push it aside. But I don't think anybody, you know, I've had a chance to work with some of the biggest performers on the planet Earth, mm-hmm. and they still feel nervous. They still feel self-conscious. They go up there, and if they have a pimple or whatever, they still feel ridiculous. And I'm like, dude, nobody cares. And, you know, and it's the same thing. It's just a regular human feeling to feel self-conscious. And I don't think that'll ever go away, but it does get easier in terms of, I've done it before. Let me just turn it off for a little bit and then go back to being in my show.
Adrian, I was wondering, for anyone tuning in who's still not sure about video or started to do some short form video but isn't getting quite the results they want, do you have a handful of tips in terms of storytelling, how to tell, and for us especially, like food stories, anything that you can impart that could maybe help people get started? Being a full-time food photographer and creative business owner is stressful. There's no question about it. From liaising with clients to creating content for Instagram to answering emails, it's a lot. What's helped me stay grounded, focused, positive, and energetic has been my commitment to a solid morning routine. At the center of that routine is good hydration and a fair dose of antioxidants to see me through the day, both of which are provided by Magic Mind. Magic Mind is the world's first productivity drink made of ceremonial grade matcha, lion's mane, turmeric, and ashwagandha. In short, everything you need to show up your best at client shoots or long days of food content creation. Unlike coffee, it doesn't give you the jitters, yet still keeps me feeling focused and alert. Plus, Magic Mind tastes absolutely delicious and is insanely healthy too. If you're a listener in the US, you can find Magic Mind at Sprouts Market. Alternatively, you can order Magic Mind online and receive your delivery straight to your door. Simply use code ECS20 to receive 20% off your one-time purchase or your subscription, the latter of which offers you further savings. You can find the link to all things Magic Mind in the show notes. Again, remember to use code ECS20 to get 20% off. I've loved drinking Magic Mind, and I know you will too. Hey you, are you struggling to create engaging short-form video content but feel overwhelmed and don't know where to start or how to improve the reels you're already creating? After months of talking about it, I am so excited to announce that our Reels course for food photographers and food content creators is now open for registration. If you'd like to be able to create short-form video content, including engaging recipe reels or educational how-to video clips, then our Reels online course for food photographers and food content creators may be for you. After having numerous content pieces go viral, I decided to pack all that I know into a comprehensive online course where I outline exactly how to script great short form videos, how to produce that all-important hook, how to film like a pro, even if you just use your phone for content creation, and how to edit your Reels to perfection. Doors to our Food Reels course are now officially open, and to celebrate, as the Food Reels course is still in beta mode, we are offering podcast listeners 10% off. Please use code PODCAST10, so PODCAST10, at checkout to claim your discount. Offer ends March 31st, 2024. To find out more, head to the show notes and follow the link. Again, this offer ends March 31st, 2024, so be sure to be quick. Now, if you're listening to this after the fact, still be sure to follow the link to see if this course may be right for you.
Yeah, first and foremost, it's about the feeling and not the product. And that's what I tell everybody. If you're selling something, whether it's your service or your, you know, or a house and they're selling real estate or donuts, it's never about the product at hand, because everybody really can serve the same product. Mm-hmm. It's about how you make this person feel different. And if you can connect to them and channel whatever it may be, it is that you're approaching it with, whether it's nostalgia or just hunger or knowledge, you want to capture that first. That's the story. And then the product or the service will sell itself. You know, when you sell a house, you know, a lot of, I have a good amount of friends who are, you know, who sell houses, and you sell the feeling of the neighborhood. You sell the feeling of what it feels like to be there. You don't sell the square footage. Well, it's part of the product, but it's like, there's so many other agents who's trying to sell the home. Like, the step above is selling the feeling that your audience feels. And I tend to write about that, and just studying some of the, you know, the best commercials out there. I don't know if you watch commercials much, like whether it's Super Bowl commercials, but.
And I'm going to be extra weird. I don't actually even watch TV.
Oh, I don't either, but I look at commercials online, you know, like
kind of study.
I love watching commercials because they're like 60 to 90 seconds and they sell the product. They capture you with the feeling that you get. So that's always been my approach. And you know, that's how you keep people watching, you know, whether it's reality shows or movies. It really is about the feeling. And there's some hacks, you know, for short form specifically, like, for example, showing what your, you know, your finished product or immediately saying what you're going to be talking about in a video first. And that takes no more than 3 seconds. And then get into the actual feeling of what it, you know, you're trying to convey. And this could be about anything, you know, and I want to express that, you know, I've been talking about, it's about the feeling more than anything, because that's really just honestly the basis of storytelling. Like, you could talk about anything. I could talk about making a cup of coffee, and anybody can make a film about a cup of coffee, but it's the feeling that the coffee is going to give me and give you. And you might be convinced to go make yourself a cup of coffee, even if you're not a coffee drinker, if it's written compelling enough.
I was wondering, with your weekly short films that you do, and I will link to your Instagram so people can go and have a look after tuning in here, but how long does it take you to come up with the idea to film and edit? Roughly, it looks like it's a heck of a lot of work, but maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I'd love to get a sense of how much time you set aside to come up with ideas and to bring it really from start to finish.
Yeah. So first, the ideation process, I don't really set time aside to do it. They kind of just come to me whenever I'm listening to a song or I'm driving or just having a conversation. I'll come up with these ideas and write it down. I do plan my writing sessions in my calendar, and writing something, sometimes it takes 10 minutes. Sometimes it takes 30 minutes. Sometimes it could take a day or two. So it really just depends on the subject matter. Sometimes I write in, when it's multiple days, I write in bits and pieces. Like, I'll write 3 lines one day because I get that feeling and I'll come back to it and continue writing it. But if I were to say on average, like the scripts that take multiple days, collectively on average, it'll take about 20 minutes of total writing time. And that's just because I'm making 60 to 90 second videos. It really should not take too long, and you shouldn't overthink it. You know, you shouldn't think like a writer necessarily. I think you just think like yourself.
Yeah.
It should be easy. It should be free flowing. Like, not everybody is going to be the most amazing writer.
Yeah.
So the reason why it's faster for, you know, me than people who tend to overthink is because I don't really think. I write based off a feeling. The next is the shooting process. My filming takes anywhere between 90 minutes to 2 hours, sometimes longer because I need to drive from location to location. But I just film wherever it's convenient and easy for me. So yeah, on average, it's like 90 minutes to 2 hours. And that's because I also shot list everything. In the writing process, I'll put the first shot as a wide shot. The second shot's a close up. The third shot's a medium shot. The fourth shot is like a transitional B-roll, and then back into a wide shot. Next, the editing process will probably take me like no more than 2 hours.
Okay. Yeah.
So altogether, the content should probably 5 to 6 hours total on average.
That makes a lot of sense. And I will double that for people who are still starting out. Because again, I think your experience definitely helps you with that. But
it,
yeah,
it I does. Think, but yeah. It does. But if you, what I call it, though, is a paper edit. And if you have, and a paper edit is you write your script, you write the shots, and you shoot those same exact shots. So when you go into your edit, no matter what platform you're using, you just drag and drop the clips exactly to where it's supposed to be. The longest part is the the stuff that isn't planned, or you don't know where it's going to go, or you don't know mm-hmm. how to create the story. But if you have that,
yeah.
And you know, I've talked to people who started implementing this. They've been able to make content at a higher rate
yeah.
and, you know, at a faster pace because they follow their script and they yeah. edit exactly how they wrote it down. And yeah, I think anybody can do it. I mean, we're making short form content.
It's interesting because it's how I approach, you know, my food photography work. So if we have a day shoot, just because we have to get so many shots in and so many recipes have to be made, or, you know, especially like with cookbooks mm-hmm. and things like that, there's just no room for mucking about. Like, you just have to get the shots in because you do. And then the only mm-hmm. way really to do that is to have, yeah, your shot list, just to make sure that, you know, if you flick through a book, a cookbook, you don't want every shot to look exactly the same. You know, you want some wider shots, yeah. some texture, then, you know, like, you just want to have a nice flow through the book. Like, it has to feel like every page has to be fun, you know, it cannot be a repeat of the page that was before. And yeah. it sounds very much like the way that absolutely. You approach your filmmaking. It sounds very, very similar.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't, yeah. you know, you don't take three different wide shots of the same dish, you know, it's exactly. the same thing with filmmaking.
Yeah, exactly. Now that leads me on very nicely to mistakes you see filmmakers, especially within the short form of video space, make. Because I know you also teach and you host competitions and all sorts of things. So I know that you see a breadth of work. Are there common mistakes that you see people make that one should try and avoid?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call them mistakes. I think they just have to learn and understand what the most important parts about filmmaking is. And it goes back to telling a story. A lot of times people tend to worry about the technical aspect mm-hmm. more than a story. And I love beautiful cinematography. I love, you know, an expensive camera, but it's never about that. People tend to get so caught up in the gear when honestly, you know, the gear like 5 to 10 years ago was already enough. Mm. So people get so caught up, like, I need this new camera. It'll help me make better films. It won't. It really will not. So that's number one. It's never about the gear, your technical ability. Number two, I guess from like a filming side, would be just using the proper focal lengths. But that's a really, really nuanced technical thing. You know, if you're talking to a camera, when do you use a wide focal length and when do you use a medium or a close-up? And these are things that you just kind of learn along the way. And I've made some guides as to what focal length to use for different types of shots. But, you know, I wouldn't say it's a mistake, but a lot of people just tend to shoot at the widest focal length all the time mm-hmm. just because it's default.
Yeah.
They don't tend to move in or show texture or show transitions, but that's just skills, you know, you learn over time and mm-hmm. also by studying really good films and commercials. But yeah. overall, like, mistakes, I don't really see them. I think just people need to think about a story more than the technicality.
Yeah.
Because I've seen iPhone films and they made me emotional.
Yeah.
There was no technical ability there. They just had an amazing story.
Now, it feels like there's so much content out there. Do you have any thoughts in terms of, I think I know what you're going to say, actually, having listened to you, but I still want to, you know, there's so much out there. There's so many people creating amazing things. How does one stand out? How does one get noticed? How does one create something worth stopping the scroll for? Any thoughts that you'd like to share on that?
Yeah, just be you. Make the things that you want to make. Don't make the things that you think people want to see. And I know it sounds really generic, but I mean, there's only one Drake. There's only one Beyonce. Mm-hmm. There's only one Jay-Z. You know, there's like, why copy somebody else? You're only going to be at the very best at that very specific thing. People can sense authenticity and people can sense mm-hmm. when you really know what you're talking about. And, you know, I've watched, you know, these fake gurus and fake experts on things. And you can see right through it. You can mm-hmm. see what their intention is. You can tell it's a quick money grab or it's just for attention and followers. But if you just make things that genuinely are you or an interest to you, chances are there's other people who are interested. You know, I've had the pleasure of seeing a handful of folks start with 100, 200 followers, getting like, you know, 50 views here and there. And they just kept on making the things that they liked. And now they have hundreds of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd been getting 50 to 150 views for years, literally years.
Yeah.
But they kept sticking true to them, to their style. And they never thought about their style. Their style is really just because of their limitations or what they're good at. And now I've seen people copy their style. It really isn't a style. You know, when people ask me like, oh man, I love the style of how you make your videos. And I never thought about a style. It just, what felt authentic to me. I filmed mm-hmm. my videos by myself like 98% of the time. So it's Adrian's a tripod shot. He's a tripod shot because it does this and it's cinematic. And, you know, there's so much poetry and a still composition. I'm like, no, I mean, yes, there is all that, but it really is because I have these limitations of filming by myself. And I think people know that to mm-hmm. a certain degree, and people can sense that, you know, people can sense like what you're good at and what you're not good at. And I think not being good at everything is a great thing too. It makes us all human. And I think faking like you're good at everything is just, we're in a time right now where people can sense that immediately. I think in order to stand out is to just be you.
To be honest, like, I knew you were going to say that.
It's, you know, it's so I was expecting cliche.
It's not cliche. I don't think it's cliche. I think it's more because that's also how I see you approach your work. You know, I've thought about this a lot. It's like, why do I enjoy Adrian's content so much? I think one, as I said, it's that pace that really stands out for me, that really speaks to me as a still life photographer. And I think the other thing is how you make everyday things beautiful. Like there's nothing flashy. There's no, you know, Mercedes, as far as I can see, or whatever, private jet. I think the one video that I like the most of yours, actually, which does really give me a lot of food for thought, was about in your Filipino home, you know, growing up as a Filipino American and what that was like. And it just felt really beautiful. Like everything was just so gorgeous, but also very authentic and raw and real without, you know, forcing that, as it were. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's your work is very, very authentic. And I think that's what makes it appeal to me.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, you look at, you know, some of the greatest filmmakers, they all have their own style, and mm-hmm. their own style, it comes from, like I said, like what they're good at and what they're not good at.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people just stop doubting their ability because of their technical skills. They'll make something great. And I think a lot of people hold themselves back because they feel like they're not ready.
Totally.
Or they don't have the skill, or it doesn't compare to anybody, you know?
I mean, what I wouldn't want is for people to look at your work and be like, oh, I can't share short form video because I'm not where Adrian is, you know?
I've shared a lot of iPhone videos, you know, that I just take with me. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't color correct them. I just piece them together and they've done well.
Yeah.
And I think that that's just because I've been able to just be me.
Yeah, for sure. Now, Adrian, before we bring the episode, the interview to a close, you've talked a lot about other filmmakers that have inspired you. And I'd be very curious to know, and then I can pop those links in the show notes, if there's like two or three filmmakers that you would really recommend looking at and studying for anybody who's interested in doing that.
Yeah, for sure. So whether you're a photographer, a filmmaker, anybody who makes content in general, I'll say this, take this with a grain of salt. I love consuming content. I love watching funny things, but I tend not to watch too much content in the same like field that mm-hmm. I'm in, because I just don't think social media is where it's at. There's still, you know, a lot of copies of other things, which is great, But I tend to look at Vimeo. Vimeo, they're just in
that's
the
old school
section.
That's old school.
It is, but there's new videos being put on there.
Yeah, it's more artsy. I think it's more artsy. Yeah.
So if anybody just browses through Vimeo, you know, there's a food commercial channel there, a food storytelling channel on there. You know, there's every possible thing you could think of, whether it's travel, food, you know, short form commercials, vertical videos, and it's the best filmmakers and storytellers in the world. That's where it lies. That's where a lot of inspiration comes from. Now, there's a lot of other social media folks that take those principles. And, you know, there's guys like, just to name a few, if you want to highlight them or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. There's Carl Shakur. He's incredible. He's a good homie of mine. There's The Life of Riza. She's on YouTube. There's Ethan Uncurated. And they're all so unique in their own style, but they don't make social media content.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a big difference between making social media geared content versus just creating art. And not to say social media content isn't art, but there's a very fine line of intent there. And I think these folks make things just to make things. And that's closer to what Vimeo is.
Yeah.
And also on my Discord, I have this thing that I have. It's called the mood board, where I just post up monthly, like, these are the things that have inspired me. Check out these videos. Look at these principles. They did this very well.
Okay.
Yeah, I put up the directors that I like there. And obviously the notable ones like Christopher Nolan, Wes Anderson, you know, Tarantino, things like that.
What I'll do is I will add, of course, links to your social in the show notes, but I'll also link to your discourse and of course, also the creators that you mentioned and the platforms that you talked about. So thank you so much, Adrian, for that. Now, before we bring the episode to a close, I always ask this final question, which is, what is your most favorite thing to eat? What is your most favorite thing to capture and with your camera? And what is your most favorite thing to share?
My favorite thing to eat, if I could eat one meal every day for the rest of my life, it would be sinigang. It's a Filipino soup dish, with meat. You eat it with rice. Yeah, that's what I would eat every day. Or a Mexican pizza, a Taco Bell Mexican pizza. I could eat like five of those in one sitting.
Okay, this is like Filipino American child's food, you know, like as in, you know, like both these parts of you are coming through, the kind of California and then the Filipino. Love it. Great. What is your most favorite thing to capture with your camera?
My favorite thing is just real life, regular life, whether it's me and my girlfriend doing normal things like on a date or at home or my dog looking cute on our bed. Most of the time, my camera roll is just half of it, more or maybe more than half of it is just my dog. And yeah, just like me experiencing life. I don't think about the cinematics of really anything that I capture for the most part. So just life. I don't know if that's too broad, but that...
No, that makes total sense. And then finally, what is your most favorite thing to share? It can be a quote, it can be an idea, anything that you would like to leave the listeners with.
Oh, man. I don't really have a favorite thing to share. But if I do want to leave anybody, like specifically for content creation and just making things, like, I think the world is a better place with more art. I don't think anybody should hold themselves back for whatever reason. When we were kids, like, they told us to nurture the creative side of us, and then we became adults and it all went away. And I think it's something that I always tell myself is, you know, we spent our whole childhood trying to grow up and be adults as fast as possible. And we spent our whole adulthood trying to keep our inner kid alive. And I think just creating something, whether you put it out for consumption or keep it to yourself, is really, really important. And I think people tend to forget that it's important to do that. So yeah, for everybody listening, just make things.
Thank you so much, Adrian, for your time. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
As always, everything and anything mentioned in today's podcast episode can be found in the show notes, including links to Adrian's Instagram, his other channels, the platforms and creators he mentioned. So be sure to head to the show notes and check all those links out. If after listening to today's podcast episode, you're like, I think I do want to delve a little bit deeper into videography work, then be sure to check out my Food Reels online course. There is currently a 10% off offer available till the end of this month. So if you're listening to this in real time, there is still time to get the course at a more affordable rate. Of course, you can find links to that in the show notes as well. And then if you'd like to explore the dichotomy of finding fame and fortune online with your food content, as well as staying authentic to your work and to your creative vision, then maybe pre-ordering my book, How to Make Your Food Famous could be a way forward. You can find the link to that in the show notes as well. Now, before I wrap up, I will just give you a sneak peek, as it were. In 2 weeks' time, there's another interview, and it is a really inspiring one as well. And it got me thinking that the way I've been able to get guests like Adrian onto the podcast, like the person we're going to be having on in about 2 weeks' time, is if the podcast continues to grow. And it can only do that with your help. So if you know someone who could benefit from the content of this podcast, please do share it. If you have an audience on Instagram who would maybe benefit from tuning in, do share it on your stories. Any way to spread the word will be deeply, deeply appreciated. Right, that's it. I will be back same time, same place in 2 weeks' time with that wonderful, inspiring episode I talked to you about just now. And until then, stay well. Before I leave you, I wanted to say thank you so, so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I also wanted to let you know that this podcast was brought to you by my Eat, Capture, Share newsletter community, and I'd love for you to join. I will pop the details on how you can join my creative community in the show notes, so do go and check it out. Also, if you enjoy the podcast, it means so much if you can rate, review, and subscribe. All those things will help the podcast to grow and to reach the right audience. And yeah, you'd kind of make my day. All right, see you soon. Take care.